From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Just over a month into his presidential tenure, Joe Biden has called in airstrikes. The target of his militarism is Syria and ostensibly Iranian-backed Iraqi militias in that country. The strikes were supposed to be retaliation for a recent rocket attack in Iraq that killed a civilian contractor and wounded a U.S. soldier and other troops. Initially, it was reported that one person was killed, but the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights reported 22 victims. My guest is Stephen Zunis, professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco, where he's coordinator of the program in Middle Eastern Studies. He's also senior policy analyst for Foreign Policy in Focus, which is a project of the Institute for Policy Studies, and associate editor of Peace Review. Welcome to the program, Stephen.
Good to be with you again.
So let me see if I understand this. The original attack that Biden is supposedly retaliating against took place in Iraq, and who he has targeted in Syria are Iranian-backed Iraqi militias, these so-called Iraqi Hezbollah. Does the logic of these airstrikes make any sense to you?
Only partially. The administration has claimed, though I've seen no evidence to support it, but they claim that these Shia militias, these Iranian-backed Iraqi militia, were getting arms through Syria, which doesn't, given that Iraq also borders Iran, it seems a bit roundabout. But that's the logic. But I think, and they are using this border post for this kind of transshipment. Apparently, they hit some trucks as an addition to some buildings that were loaded with munitions. At least that's the claim. I think the reason they chose to bomb just barely on the Syrian side of the border was I think they knew if they ended up bombing the same militia within Iraqi territory, it would raise howls of objections from the Iraqi parliament, which also have already called for the withdrawal of U.S. troops, and could create kind of a crisis in Iraqi U.S. relations. So taking place in Syria, where we don't really care what the government there thinks about, seemed to be politically the safer bet if the goal was indeed to send a message, by engaging in airstrikes.
So I understand that the strike took place. I mean, you're saying it happened very, just sort of within the border of between Iraq and Syria. And if you look at a map, and for our TV audience, we'll put up a map right now. If you look at a map, you have, Syria, and then to the east of Syria, you've got Iraq. To the east of Iraq, you've got Iran. Iran is backing these Iraqi militias in Syria. Is this at the behest? Is all of this happening at the behest of the Syrian government, or are these militias on the side of the Syrian rebels that are fighting the government? Explain the allegiances here.
Well, these militia are fighting on the side of the Assad regime, and like the armed forces of the Assad regime itself, they have engaged in some atrocities in the suppression of various rebel groups.
So this is part of the Iranian government's alliance with Syria.
Yes, yeah, very much so. So again, this is a nasty lot, and one can certainly criticize the Iranian government for backing a repressive regime like Syria, but they are there at the behest, at the request of the Syrian government, unlike U.S. forces, which are there in Syria against explicitly against the wishes of the Iranian government. And similarly in Iran, these militia are actually authorized by the Iraqi government as part of the Iraqi armed forces, even though people would argue that their loyalty in many cases is more with certain Iranian clerics and then with the government in Baghdad. And the United States actually initially encouraged these Shia groups soon after the invasion to go after the Baathists and the nationalists and the leftists and various Sunni factions. And then more recently, when the U.S. returned to Iraq, U.S. Effectively fought alongside some of these very militia during the war against ISIS. And after ISIS was largely defeated in both Syria and Iraq, and U.S. troops remained, there was growing resentment among some Iraqis about the continued presence of U.S. forces there. And we have had these periodic attacks by these Iranian allied militia at U.S. bases, and so now the U.S. is essentially fighting these groups as well.
And incidentally, Russia is very much also involved in this alliance with Iran and the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, which is a UK-based group that tries to document atrocities in Syria, found that in the same week that the US dropped bombs in Syria, Russia was bombing as well, dropped 250 airstrikes, and according to the Syrian Observatory, its victims were members of ISIS. So the US...
And unfortunately, they also hit a hospital in Azar, killing of civilians as well.
So Russia hit a hospital. This is just, so the backdrop for all of this is the most horrendous war in Syria, a war that has claimed so many lives, has gone on for about a decade now. There was a time when the Syria was covered in the war quite, widely and covered in the news quite widely. And now we're not seeing very much coverage and, except, of course, in the context of airstrikes. Initially, we were told that the U.S. strikes that Biden authorized killed one person. Now it's 22. What do you know in terms of who was killed and who's actually, I believe it was the Iraqi militias that are saying only one was killed?
Yeah. A larger number seems more realistic, given that they blew up some trucks full of ammunition at a border post, where there are buildings around. These are presumably mostly military people. I mean, it's not like we bombed the city or anything like that. But again, it is definitely an escalation, and one that there could be tit for tat retaliation. And I think one of the things I think really we need to examine carefully is that. Basically, there would be no Iranian allied militia in Iraq if the United States had not invaded. There would not have been ISIS if the United States had invaded. These are direct outgrowths of the U.S. invasion and occupation, which Biden strongly supported. And we warned him and other senators that the overthrow of Saddam could create a power vacuum and a likely counterinsurgency war, which would lead to the rise of these sectarian militia, including Salafist extremists such as Al-Qaeda and ISIS. But now we have had successive administrations, both Democratic and Republican, justify continued U.S. military presence in Iraq, fighting the very forces that came as a result of a previous intervention. And so it really seems, what's upsetting about this is, granted, there have been some U.S. military operations that are morally more reprehensible than what we've been seeing in dealing with these various militia. But on the other hand, the idea is that we've created this monster that we're now using to perpetuate more U.S. militarism. If Biden really wanted to keep our troops safe, he really wanted to protect the troops, bring them home. We only have like 3,500 of them there. And it really doesn't seem like there's much real strategic rationale, given the risk that it has, not just of getting Americans killed and then getting Iraqis or Syrians or others killed, but that it could spiral out of control and perhaps even lead to a direct confrontation with Iran.
Let's look at the political response in Washington, D.C. This is the airstrikes that Biden authorized were embraced by Republicans. The Republicans rarely embrace anything that Democrats do these days. But Senator Lindsey Graham said that he was very much in favor of the bombing. He said, "I appreciate Biden administration striking Iranian-backed militia groups in Syria who've been pushing attacks against American forces in Iraq and other locations. It's imperative that our enemies know that attacking Americans comes at a cost. Very supportive of the strike and hope it will create necessary deterrence in the future." The reason why, of course, American forces, as you said, are vulnerable in Iraq is because we have American forces in Iraq. Remove those forces And suddenly, a lot of this logic disappears. Others have pointed out the hypocrisy, and I think you have as well on social media, of, say, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki, Kamala Harris, our vice president, who a couple of years ago, when the Trump administration was bombing Syria, questioned the basis, the legal basis, and the right of a president to hit a sovereign nation. So what do you make of this?
I mean, they're right the first time, and that the there, in terms of international law, there was no legal basis for these strikes. In fact, even domestic law, we've never authorized the return of troops to Iraq. We haven't authorized these airstrikes, and Psaki and Vice President Harris were correct in challenging it when Trump was doing it. But again, with the Democratic administration doing the same sort of thing, obviously they are no longer taking that position. I think these legal questions really, really are important, because, you know, the people that elected, you know, Biden, you know, were people who really are tired of these endless wars. In fact, Biden even talked about getting out of these endless wars. And it's really hard when we have so many pressing concerns at home, when we need the funding to address the COVID and the resulting recession and growing inequality and climate change and things like that. We're still spending hundreds of billions of dollars of keeping this massive military apparatus overseas. And this is so I really hope that this incident will help redirect people that even though we're distracted by these concerns at home, that foreign policy is important. Not just for the people who are impacted on the ground, but this is sapping our resources for the sake of empire, frankly. And
how many vaccines could those airstrikes costs have bought, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
So there is some opposition in the Senate and in the House. One of the people calling out Jen Psaki was Congresswoman Ilhan Omar. In the Senate, we see Democrats Tim Kaine and Chris Murphy, who on Friday said that Biden needs to, you know, offer some legal justification that he can't simply abuse the War Powers Act. We know that there's likely to be opposition from someone like Bernie Sanders, who has stood firm against the U.S. Support to Saudi Arabia in the Yemen war.
Yeah, Sanders has spoken out against the bomb.
And so there seems to be some appetite among some Democratic lawmakers to not simply roll over when a president, when their president drops bombs. Are you heartened by that?
Yeah, yes, I am. And I think that there's a lot of skepticism about Biden when it comes to foreign policy. Even though on some domestic issues, he's actually been more progressive than some people thought he would be, and he's been getting a lot of support from left liberal groups for many of these domestic initiatives. In foreign policy, he's always been something of a hawk. I mean, he as head of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, he played a major role in pushing the Iraq War resolution through the Democratic-controlled Senate that otherwise might have been able to stop it. He repeated the lies of the Bush administration that Iraq had developed all these weapons and weapons programs and weapons systems. And indeed, many of the people that he's appointed to high foreign policy positions, like the Secretary of State and National Security Advisor, have also definitely been on the hawkish wing of the party. And so I think this is going to be, the foreign policy is going to be, especially in the Middle East, is going to be the area where I think that there's going to be the most clear battles between the Biden administration and the Democratic Party base, which has never been more skeptical of U.S. Militarism and intervention.
Unfortunately, we see some figures in the mainstream media, corporate media, be very supportive of these strikes in a way that they weren't when the Trump administration was engaging in them. There was one article in the New York Times on Friday that called what Biden did a carefully calibrated approach. Then you had Amy Siskind, who said, oh, it's so different having military action under Biden. No middle school level threats on Twitter. Trust Biden and his team's competence. What do you make of this?
Well, I mean, they're definitely more competent, I guess, in certain ways, but this naive idea that a Democratic bomb is somehow better than a Republican bomb, I find rather offensive. I mean, on the one hand, it was a limited strike, apparently only military people in kind of limited ways. This wasn't like the whole scale bombing we had of Raqqa or Erbil and which killed thousands of people, which took place under the Trump administration. At the same time, I think it is critically important not just to blindly accept this attitude that the U.S. has a right to bomb anybody.
I mean, and to also say that one must trust a president and his competence is the exact opposite of what journalism should be. You never trust.
Journalists should be questioning these kinds of things, including demanding evidence that the these Iranian-backed militia and Iran itself were actually behind these attacks. They very well may be, but they need to put this kind of evidence forward, given the history of lies that both Republican and Democratic administrations have made.
What about the fact that Biden, at the same time that he's hitting Iranian-backed militias, is somehow hoping to revive the nuclear agreement with Iran that was, one of the positive aspects of foreign policy achievements under the Obama regime, under the Obama presidency, and that agreement was, of course, decimated by Trump. Biden was hoping to revive that deal. Is this a way of getting some sort of leverage against Iran?
If this is the idea, I don't think it'll work. If anything, it'll make the Iranians even more suspicious of U.S. intentions. And by highlighting Iranian intervention and involvement in places like Syria and Iraq, is going to build the push that you're seeing, even from some Democratic circles, that before rejoining the agreement, that Biden has to force the Iranians to give in to a lot of other demands about stopping their intervention in support of extremist groups and in support of repressive governments like Syria, et cetera, et cetera. And this is really off for a number of reasons. First of all, I mean, by that standard, the Iranians could demand the United States stop us supporting extremist groups, repressive governments, and intervening in the affairs of other countries. But also the fact is that, if you look at the history of arms control negotiations, I mean, in the height of the Cold War, where the United States and the Soviet Union had these proxies fighting each other all over the place, we were still able to sign the SALT agreement and other the Test Ban Treaty and other arms control agreements, because it was a recognition that if you wait to figure out all these other things, you're going to never get anything done on the arms control front. And so I think this is the thing that really worries me the most about going back to the nuclear agreement, is that the Biden administration is getting pressure and is even dropping hints that they may try to open up to larger issues, which is not going to go anywhere. I mean, Iran, we'll be lucky if Iran goes back to the original deal as written.
Right, because that was hard fought.
And to add other demands onto it, that's a non-starter.
I mean, that was basically what the Trump administration was saying, is that, this deal was not good enough, we should have demanded X, Y, and Z, and that we gave in to Iran, and therefore we're undoing this deal, and that didn't work. I want to pivot to another important story in Middle East politics, which was the CIA intelligence report on the murder of Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi. That shows unequivocally that Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman was the one who approved the gruesome killing and dismemberment of this Washington Post journalist at a Saudi embassy in Turkey. Biden released the report, which was being classified, had a phone conversation on the day before the report was released with King Salman, didn't reveal what exactly was being said. What is the game that he is playing, as far as you can tell? Because now we've heard on Friday that he will not penalize the Crown Prince over the killing of Khashoggi.
It does seem odd. On the one hand, for the sake of transparency, he did make public this investigation, which the Trump administration had suppressed, but still thinks we can kind of continue business as usual with the Saudi regime. There's And in the phone conversation, or at least in sort of the press release that followed it, it sounded almost as if nothing had changed about improving, you know, having good relations and all that kind of stuff. And though even though Biden has announced that he is ceasing the direct U.S. support for Saudi Arabia's genocidal war on Yemen, that we continue to provide arms and support for to defend Saudi Arabia from the Iranians and from the Iranian-backed Houthi militia in Yemen. What's bizarre about this is that the occasional shelling of Saudi bases by the Houthis are only in retaliation, the massive bombing of that country. If the Saudi Arabia wasn't bombing them, they wouldn't be retaliating by sending these missiles back. And when it comes to Iran, and I also should mention that while the Houthis have gotten some limited support from Iran, they're not closely tied like the militia in Iraq and in Syria are. So the Iranian role in the Houthi rebellion has been grossly exaggerated. But the idea that, oh, we have to send them against Iran itself. Well, Saudi Arabia has a much larger military budget and much stronger military than Iran does. Their military budget is six times that of the Iranians. So why would they need additional U.S. weapons to defend themselves? And not to mention, what's a defensive weapon versus an offensive weapon? So really, unless there is a complete arms moratorium on Saudi Arabia, we are part and parcel with the repression by that brutal, misogynist family dictatorship. And I think this is an area where Biden really does need to be challenged, along with support of other dictatorships like Sisi in Egypt and the Emirates and Bahrain and other autocratic governments in that part of the world.
I'm wondering how you assess Biden's approach. You know, when Trump decided that the price was too high to hold MBS accountable for Khashoggi because Saudis buy U.S. weapons, he just came straight out and said it. Biden doesn't say it, but, you know, say there was a piece in the New York Times about this that summarized, President Biden has decided that the price of directly penalizing Saudi Arabia's crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, is too high, according to senior administration officials, despite a detailed American intelligence finding that he directly approved the killing of Jamal Khashoggi. I mean, honestly, if you're going to criticize Trump for having moral standards that are so low, you have to criticize Biden for the same. In this case, they're quite directly comparable. The difference is that Trump just came out and said it.
Yeah, very, very much so. I mean, Trump exaggerated the number of jobs that were created by the arms sales, but Biden doesn't express that explicitly and try to defend it. But it's clear that there a lot of it does have to do this kind of transactional kind of view that again Trump is more explicit about, but it's apparently part of Biden's worldview as well, because again, it's not just arms sales. You know, you have very powerful U.S. corporations that are tied with various infrastructure projects in the country. We're not quite as dependent on their oil as we used to be, but they're still a major player in the international oil market. And they are, even though they're not nearly the largest Arab country in population, they are the richest, and they have a lot of influence in different parts of the world. And we cooperate with the Saudis and in terms of supporting allied governments and movements and punishing governments and movements that we don't like. And so it appears that he's not willing to risk that. But I think this really has to be something that the American people are become engaged in and challenged about, because I'm hard pressed to find anybody, even a lot of Republicans, who feel comfortable about the U.S.-Saudi relationship. And this is something that I can't imagine as much popular support.
Well, Stephen, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Always appreciate your analysis on these issues.
Thank you. Enjoy talking with you.
My guest has been Dr. Stephen Zunis, Professor of Politics and International Studies at the University of San Francisco, where he also coordinates the program in Middle Eastern Studies. We've been discussing U.S. airstrikes on Syria. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingup@sonali.com. You can sign up for our daily newsletter. Do follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.